coming up on this edition of Open Source.
Women that hold high-ranking positions are unjustly criticized or critiqued for their performance. Even a personality or leadership style is looked upon as being bitchy or critical, whereas men are applauded for having the same approach. So there is a difference. I mean, there's a difference in gender. There's a difference in race. There is a difference. And the only way to get around that is to honestly acknowledge that it exists.
That's all next on Open Source. Karen Dumas checks all the boxes of an experienced communications pro. Karen's worked in the government sector, the corporate sector, and with nonprofits. She's also been a contributor and analyst on radio, television, and in print. On this edition of Open Source, I talk with Karen Dumas about what it takes to succeed as a communicator. Karen Dumas, welcome to Open Source.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
So those things I say about you as a communicator, how do you see yourself? Who is Karen Dumas? How do you explain yourself?
You know, I usually don't, Tony, for better or worse. I think that I've been around quite a bit, and so people tend to know me in one or more pockets. People know me from my communications background. People know from my connection background, or people know me in that media space or in the community space. So sometimes I just kind of let what they already know suffice until they have the opportunity to connect with me to learn more.
Do you have... is there a certain area of communications that you're more passionate about, or is it all just one thing to you?
Well, for me, I'm passionate about strategy because people tend to be haphazard and reactionary when they think about communications. They don't necessarily think about it or incorporate it into their daily operations, which they should. So I'm all about strategy, not overreaction. You know, not just responding, because if you anticipate, people always say, you know, do you do crisis management? And I say, yeah, but I primarily do crisis prevention, because if I know what's going on, then we circumvent problems and we cut them off at the pass. So if I had to pick one thing, it would be strategy.
Okay. So when you talk about strategy, is there a Karen Dumas philosophy? What are we talking about here?
Well, I think it's an honest assessment, and I say that because I see so many people, not just in the communication sector, but just across the board, where people are yes people. They're so afraid of either losing a paycheck, losing a project, losing a client, that they are not honest about what needs to be done, even if that means that the decision makers on the client side of the table has to do something different. So, you know, my approach is to be very honest in the assessment, very honest in the recommendation, and very timely in the execution of an agreed upon strategy, and being consistent. You know, I'm not about a lot of unnecessary process. You know, people want to write plans and proposals, and I get all that. But at the same time, let's make a decision and let's execute. People are comfortable having long, unnecessary conversations. I was just listening to a webinar earlier today, and they spent the first 18 minutes talking about what they were going to talk about in the webinar. So by 22 minutes in, I'm lost. So I'm not one for wasting a lot of, you know, unnecessary process. Again, creating a plan and executing.
That's perfect, because it kind of gets to the root of what I really wanted to talk to you about and why I asked you to do this. And I've asked another friend or two to participate as we go along in the future, but you're my first victim, so to speak. But when when you are as consistent and strong in your positions, I know, because I've seen it happen, there's pushback, and you've experienced tremendous backlash at times. You laugh, but you have. And I want to talk to you about that. I want you to explain to the audience and to me what it means to be a woman in a male-dominated environment and to speak as firmly as you do, and what the reactions have been and what the experience has been like for you.
Well, and if in fact you are allowed to permeate that circle, then it can be good. But you have to first look at what are the reasons why you're allowed in. You know, it can be any number of reasons. As a woman, I'd like to think it's because we bring a valued skill set and perspective to that conversation. But a lot of times when you get around the table and that skill set and that conversation challenges the status quo, there can be pushback, not just from the people in charge, but from the people whose deficiencies are highlighted by your skill set, your perspective, and your candid approach to resolving a problem. I've seen that. There are times that I haven't been invited around tables and not invited back because I'm not the game player. You know, I'm not going to sit there and agree with everything around the table just for the sake of keeping peace. And that's what most people like. I think the biggest example of the pushback on my side of the table was when I was serving as chief of communications and external affairs for the city of Detroit under former Mayor Dave Bing, and had a disgruntled employee sue me, the mayor, and the city. And so, you know, a lot of times people are in over their heads and they take the quickest way out, especially if they're aware of a system that they know how to exploit. So, you know, people are uncomfortable when you challenge the status quo. But if you look at things, Tony, we've been having the same conversations, regenerating the same information. You know, we've had master plans in this city for decades, and yet and still we're talking about the same issues. And I think that's an example, whether you're looking at city government, whether you're looking at organizational structure, or even corporate entities. It's all the same thing. I was reading an article in the Harvard Review the other day, and it was talking about process. So people who are in the process realize that there's too much process, but yet and still they participate in the process. You know, we have 77,000 nonprofit organizations here in the state of Michigan. What are they doing? Because we still have 77,000 problems. So, you know, people at some point have to understand and acknowledge whether or not they really want to make a change or whether they just want to continue with the status quo and just continue to pretend like everything is going to be okay if we continue to plan and discuss, but never do.
You have what it seems like a take no prisoners approach. Would you agree with that?
Well, I wouldn't call it that because it's not abrasive. You know, I'm not a know-it-all. I mean, certainly there are opportunities for everybody to contribute, but you can't keep contributing the same thing. I mean, what is insanity? You know, doing the same thing over and expecting different results. So, you know, at a certain point, I'm results-oriented. Excuse me, and I think I attribute that to being an entrepreneur for the majority of my career. We have a different approach to getting things done. I don't have a collect-a-check mentality, which means that I'm not used to going into an office, punching a clock at 9 and getting off at 5 and getting a check, regardless of how non-productive I am. And a lot of people are able to do that. You know, they're not judged by performance. As an entrepreneur, if I'm not productive, if my clients aren't satisfied, I don't get paid. So I have a different approach to being efficient and being effective. And I think that carries over into everything that I do. I mean, I have a get it done mentality. And so it's not take all prisoners. I consider myself a team player. I expect and appreciate input, even input that may disagree with my opinion or my perspective. And then at the end of the day, let's collectively decide what needs to be done. And then let's do it. We shouldn't be having the same conversation 2 weeks from now.
Do you what's your experience with the so-called glass ceiling? I know that there is a glass ceiling as a woman and maybe as a woman of color. But what are your experiences there?
Well, you know, I have not spent a lot of time in corporate America. So I think that is something that is pretty prevalent when people have to go through the tradition of a performance review, which can be not just based on a performance, you know, it can be based on somebody's, you know, personal opinion and all those kinds of things. I mean, that's human nature and human error, but it certainly exists. You know, you can even see women that hold high ranking positions, are unjustly, criticized or critiqued for their performance, whereas men are allowed to get away or it's dismissed. You know, even a personality or leadership style is looked upon as being, you know, bitchy or critical or, you know, one way, whereas men are applauded for having the same approach. So there is a difference. I mean, there's a difference in gender. There's a difference in race. I mean, there is a difference. And the only way to get around that is to honestly acknowledge that it exists.
I think I think you're right. And I think if we don't address it, that's a problem. What do you find yourself ever feeling like you're not going to say something, you're holding back because you don't want to upset the apple cart at certain times?
No, but there are times that I have to think about how I phrase something, only because I recognize first and foremost that we're dealing with other persons, other humans, and other personality. You know, part of another article I was reading the other day talked about how managers and people in leadership positions, their desire to be liked, and that inhibits their ability to make and execute a decision. So I tend to kind of look at the people that I have to deal with or that I am dealing with, and I take that into consideration into how I frame my recommendations and responses.
What would you say at the Karen Dumas you are now? What would you say now, if you could, to the 21-year-old Karen Dumas? What would you tell her starting out?
I did have a different approach when I was younger, and it didn't go over well. It was something I had to learn to temper, because things were so obvious that I thought were so obvious to me. Like, why can't, you know, I remember I had gone before a group. They were looking for a public relations consultant, and they had us fill out, you know, this questionnaire prior to, and then we had to go before this committee. And the committee was asked the exact same questions that had already been asked in the questionnaire. And I challenged them when I said, I've answered all these questions already. I would assume that you'd be asking me something different. That didn't go over well. So, you know, I learned to be a little less, I'm not going to say maybe abrasive, but to the point, because, you know, I've learned to manage tone and texture. And then I also realized that I've grown too. You know, I mean, I've learned some things over the years that I thought I knew then that I didn't. You know, it comes with age and experience.
That's maturity. I would agree with you there. On another subject, I'm curious too, how would you say that technology has changed how you are able to work and do work and accomplish things from when you started out? How has tech changed and changed your work?
Oh, man, listen, technology has been amazing. I mean, because of technology, even years ago, I closed my office, got rid of my staff because I didn't need it. I didn't need that overhead. Most people have the opportunity or pursued an opportunity to be independent consultants, so I could use them remotely. And, you know, you're able to connect and converse with people all over the world. I mean, it's great. You know, you don't have to spend time. I mean, I know it sounds simple, but things like email, you know, now we're all on Zoom conference calling and, you know, we're able to connect that way. So I like it. I mean, I think it takes out some of that process. You know, you don't have to be in a room to be able to communicate with somebody or to make a decision. You know, you can have a Google Hangout. I mean, you've got all types of options now rather than just face-to-face. And I think that the issue surrounding this COVID-19 crisis is highlighting that for a lot of people, some for the first time.
And I agree with you. I think what you've been experiencing, say, the last decade or so, a lot of people that are being forced to work from home now are just discovering some of that. And so how do you see the workplace? How do you see all the changes that we're experiencing with the forced shut-in lockdown situation going forward after this is over? How do you think we'll be changed because of it in terms of work environment?
We're going to be changed drastically. And in some areas, we should be changed drastically. I think people are going to realize that a lot of the stuff that we did, a lot of the stuff that we bought, and a lot of the stuff that we wanted, we don't necessarily need, that we can do without. I think that, you know, a lot of employers will see two things. One, that some of their staff can be effective and efficient at home. People don't need to hold down a carpet for 8 hours a day in order to be productive. And I also like to think that they're now seeing just how important Some of our essential workers are, which tend to be the lower paid workers, that they don't have the health care, the paid time off that they need, you know, which is why a lot of these workers were masking their symptoms and inadvertently possibly infecting other people. I'd also like to see some changes in terms of how people connect with their families. You know, people are at home with their kids now for the first time in a long time, and they didn't know them. They pass them off at school, pass them off to daycare. They come home. Everybody's doing something different. So I'd like to see a little return to that. And also some of the disparities, the social, the economic, and the educational disparities that have been highlighted during this crisis need to be addressed. You know, these things aren't new. Now that they're back in the forefront, how are we going to demand that they be addressed?
Well, I think a lot of those things have been on the table for a while. And like you've said during this conversation, they've been discussed. And so they're not necessarily new, but they've mm-hmm. been marginalized. I think some of those things are going to become part of our mainstream conversation now. In fact, the cost cutting measures that like you did in your own business, I think some people are going to mm-hmm. see that as well. They can reduce overhead by having people work from home, strategically have people work from home. So,
but then that and that's good, but that becomes a shift to productivity, and you know, a shift to focus on output. Most of the time, people are focused on hours, like how long you're at work. Okay, so you know, I remember once when I was working in the Kilpatrick administration, and I was on the air at WCHB at the time, and I did a 10-to-2 show, I believe. And man, people were having a fit. How are you working for the city and you're on the air, you know, for 4 hours a day? Okay, so I can sit in my office and you not care that I'm not doing anything, or I can be here and help just, you know, just deliver information that would be helpful to the residents of the city. So people have a mentality that needs to shift to productivity and, you know, and performance based outcomes, and not just I've been at work for 8 hours. OK, but what did you do?
I think that you're right.
A lot of times the answer is
people have to have a way to look at that metric and to be able to measure it. I mean, how do you, for some positions, I don't think leaders know how to judge how productive a person has been. All they can really do is tell from the hours. They don't know.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, the thing about it is that this is part of that shift. Like, what is a person responsible for? You know, I mean, I'm not into the can kicking, you know, which says, oh, you know, I've been trying. I've been doing this. You know, I knew of someone that wanted to hire a chief development officer for an organization that traditionally did not have a chief development officer. And I said, well, you know, it would be easier to hire a chief development consultant, because that way that person is held accountable for the money that they generate. They're paid, you know, a fee or a percentage, rather than have somebody come in, you're paying them a salary and benefits, and all they can tell you every week is that they've reached out to 10 people. We're trying, we're setting something up. You know, it's a constant, you just have to look at things differently. And I think that because a lot of people are used to being in a traditional work environment, there's a learning curve on that side too. Like, how do you balance being at home? You know, you get up and you treat it like any other day. You know, you get dressed, you know, if you're going to work out or grab something to eat, and then get started. You know, time management and organization are key. And again, you know, it's being driven by goals and outcome. Like, you know, not being a procrastinator. If I were a procrastinator, I'd have tons of stuff screwed up because everything has shut down because of the COVID-19. But, you know, that's not part of who I am.
As you look towards the future for yourself, I mean, what would you like to see Karen Dumas do next? What's the next thing for you to do? What do you want to do?
You know what, Tony? That's something that I have been thinking about. You know, I've had the privilege of doing some pretty decent things, but I think like a lot of people during this quote unquote downtime, there's a lot of self-reflection, a lot of, you know, self-insight. And I don't know, I'm trying to really figure that out. People have said, Karen, you know, you should write another book. You know, I certainly like another platform. I would like to do something that continues to engage and make the community aware of not only their responsibility, but their empowerment and how they can make better decisions for the quality of their life. So I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out, Tony. I try to figure it out all the time. You know, we've talked about this over the years, like, what do I do next? So God has been looking out for me all this time, so I can only expect that he'll continue to do so.
All right. Now, last thing, the issue of diversity is out there, and the Detroit area is a diverse community, as are many communities around the country. And so you have different groups of people competing for the same resources. And then I think on a national level, that conversation is going on as well. Is it time for people of diverse groups to coalesce their, I guess, their goals, so to speak, to move things forward, or how do you view those, the diversity and groups working together?
First of all, Detroit is not diverse. Detroit is still predominantly African American. The complexion of our city has changed because we have experienced an influx of predominantly young, white, and employed residents. You know, diversity is not a bad thing. It's a code word. Excuse me. But, you know, I'm not so sure that we can combine our goals, because as much as we want to pretend like, you know, we have shared goals, the reality is that we don't, at least not as distinguished by race. I do think that there are a lot of commonalities. You know, we all want a good quality of life. We all want our children to be educated. We all want to be able to provide for our family and have some peace and security as it relates to public safety. And those are our shared goals. But I do think that, as we talked about earlier in the conversation, there are social, economic, health, and educational disparities that need to be addressed. And so, you know, I think those are sometimes not just distinguishable by race, but, you know, distinguishable by socioeconomic status. You know, diversity looks good and it reads well, but I think the key to any successful diversity and inclusion outreach has to be personal awareness and respect. I think people have to start to understand that we're different, and different is not better or worse, and just respect people regardless of how they look or how they love. You know, we're always looking for something that distinguishes, you know, us from everybody else. And I think that's how this country was built. So that'll always be in the vein of this country and how it operates. That's how it was set up, and that's how it continues to function. But I do think that people have to understand, if we're ever going to make a difference with any type of cooperation and inclusion, it has to be in the lap of each individual. Because you can have a diversity and inclusion strategy for a company, but if the person in charge of it, you know, has some kind of hang up for a person that is different in race or culture or religion or a gender preference, then they can execute something completely different than what they have on paper. So that shoots that right out of the window. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I think it ultimately does come down to leadership. And I think the leadership has to set that tone. And so it's hard to get folks that are at the top, if they're not concerned as you are or I am about these issues, it's hard to make change then. It really is.
Yeah, that's true. Especially if you want to pretend as though it doesn't exist, or if you are totally disconnected from the reality that they exist. I have heard people, you know, over the last couple of weeks act as though they're totally surprised about the disparities in healthcare. And I'm like, but you've been in healthcare, or you are an elected official that's worked in healthcare, or you represent people of a diverse community or varying backgrounds. How do you not know? And why haven't you done anything about it?
Well, I agree with you. And it's what's sad to me is to see some of the frontline healthcare workers at hospitals around the country, just in tears, confronting the challenges, and especially in these Black and Brown communities where they're just overwhelmed. And I think that's something that as a country we've got to face and do something about.
Well, think about the people that are impacted. I mean, even here, right here in Detroit, African Americans are disproportionately impacted and losing their life to COVID-19, as are Latinos in New York. You know, so I mean, Black and Brown people have always caught, you know, pneumonia when everybody else has caught a cold. But it should, you know, really highlight the inequities that have existed in this country. Period. And, you know, if you say, okay, we see them, so now what? What are you going to do about them? That's the thing. Or are we going to all go back and seek a level of normalcy, which is what got us into this in the first place?
Well, unfortunately, but I think for change's sake, maybe it is a good thing. We are a long way from receding to our respective corners and getting back to normal, because that's not going to happen for a while, Karen. I really appreciate you sharing with us.
It really shouldn't.
No, it shouldn't happen. I think in really more voices like yours need to be included in these conversations. And I think in the decision making, because in order to make a difference, that's what it's going to take. Not just talking.
Yeah, well, I certainly agree, Tony. And, you know, like I said, I've seen some African-Americans hold some pretty high ranking positions in healthcare. And for them to act as though they're surprised or taken aback by the fact that there are gaping disparities is a disappointment. Because my thing is that either these are things that you knew, should have known, and should have admitted long before now. And now the question is, what are we going to do about them? So yeah, we're not going to go back to normal, and hopefully our new normal makes us all better and stronger.
Well, I hope so, and I think as we go forward and things do improve, we'll address this in the future. That's it for this time. You've been listening to Open Source with Tony Motley. My guest has been the vivacious Karen Dumas. Thank you all for listening. Open Source is a co-production of Duet Digital Media and McLaughlin Media.